We are in a mini-series about how to read a scientific paper that led to the Nobel Prize. Using our practical steps, we will be able to read a paper in a field that we are unfamiliar with. Today we will discuss the power of text elements in a figure by the Nobel laureates. Specifically, we will discuss the category axis labels in a bar graph and how well they can tell the experimental conditions when they are organized carefully. Hi everyone, welcome to the Foundational Skills in Life Sciences podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Synaptologica. We discuss the skills that life science scholars learn, use, and improve throughout professional activities. Your benefit is expressed in my motto, learn the skills, enjoy academic life. In the last episode, we talked about one graph in the Milestone Article 1. It is the paper written by the laureates of the Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine 2023. The laureates were Dr. Carrico and Dr. Weissman, and the paper was published in the journal Immunity in the year 2005. The graph is so impressive and so important that we called it our milestone graph. It is one of the three graphs in the figure panel, figure 3D. We started devoting step 11 to discussing how to read the graph deeply. So it was step 11, examine one graph in depth. We have already talked about its three sub-steps. Step 11-1, interpret the basic elements of the graph. 11-2, look for explanations in the figure legend. And 11-3, decipher the axis labels in the graph. We read the axis labels in the graph, and we read the figure legend. We also recalled what we learned from the Nobel Committee video. We collected these pieces of information flexibly to understand what the graph tells us. So the information we collected was written or explained either in the paper itself or in the Nobel Committee video. Today, we will talk about the information that was not written or explained clearly outside the paper. The information or its interpretation is evident when a pro looks at the graph, but the interpretation is not clearly stated, so it is hidden from a naive viewpoint. One such piece of information is the meticulous design of how the laureates show the graph labels. Specifically, they are the category axis labels of a bar graph. The labels suggest to us the experimental conditions, and so they suggest to us how to read the graph. The single sub-step of today is step 11-4, understand the basic experimental conditions by reading the axis labels. By the way, in the last episode, I said that we would have at least three sub-steps more for step 11, and we would discuss them in today's episode. But while preparing the content, I found it would be too long for a single episode. So I will dedicate a separate episode to each sub-step of step 11. Also, I'm now realizing that our mini-series on reading is going to be very long. It is already longer than I had planned originally. There will be many more episodes to come. This is because I'm pouring my heart into making it informative and beneficial. I'm excited to share the mini-series with you. I hope you will enjoy every part of it. So, here is our sub-step of today again. Step 11-4, understand the basic experimental conditions by reading the axis labels. In a graph of any life science paper, the text elements can tell us how to read its content. In my view, the goal of using text elements in a graph is for readers to understand the content with minimal effort. Good authors will craft the graph and its labels very well, so that the readers will use the minimal brain power to easily understand the content and focus their effort on interpreting the data, rather than to struggle deciphering the data. How do good authors achieve this? Good authors will achieve this by implementing at least three features. 1. Maximizing necessary information. Labels convey essential details. 2. Minimizing number and content. Simplify labels to avoid confusion and clutter. And 3, organizing spatially. Spatial relationship between the labels can tell us important aspects of experimental conditions. All these features are best shown in our milestone article 1. Our milestone graph is a horizontally oriented bar graph. The category axis labels will identify what experimental condition each bar represents. But before talking about how those axis labels are crafted professionally, let's see what non-helpful axis labels could look like. Potentially non-helpful axis labels. There are labels that are not friendly to the readers. There can be many types. I will give you 3 examples here, starting with the worst case and progressing in quality. 1. In the worst example, the experimental conditions are explained in the figure legend outside the figure or in the main text. But axis labels are absent in the graph, so it is very difficult to read the graph. This is a very rare case. I found it in a manuscript submitted to a journal before peer review. 2. The second example is better than the first. The experimental conditions are explained in the figure legend outside the figure, and the axis labels are present in the graph. But the labels are simply alphabets, for example, A, B, C, or simply numbers, 1, 2, 3. To understand the content, the readers need to go between the axis labels and the figure legend. 3. Like the second example, the experimental conditions are explained in the figure legend, and the axis labels, say the alphabets, for example, A, B, C, are present in the graph. The explanations of the axis labels are given, not only in the figure legend outside the figure, but also as an inset legend within the graph. This is more helpful than the second example because our eyes do not have to go outside the graph for the explanations. But still, to understand the content, readers need to connect between the axis labels of a graph and the inset legend within the same graph. There is a similar situation. The bars can be labeled not with texts, such as alphabets or numbers, but with how the bars are filled. Bar fill can be done, for example, with different colors and with different shading patterns. In all these cases, the readers need to identify the axis labels or bar fitting patterns, if present, and look for their explanations. The explanations can be found elsewhere. 1. In the main text outside the figure. 2. In the figure legend, usually below the figure. Or 3. In an inset legend box inside the graph. And then the readers need to connect them and link the information. The readers need to spend time and effort to make such mental connections between at least 2 locations. Even if the time and effort can be a small amount for a single graph, it will continue to accumulate when the readers go through multiple graphs across different figures. And such time and effort can be frustrating, especially when we have read through the figures and when we want to review the figures. We will go back and forth between figures and we will compare the details of them. Each time, we will need mental connections between the labels and the legends. Repeated connections will slow us down a lot. For reviewing the content of a graph, we want to have quick and direct references for the axis labels. Helpful axis labels. I think that if the readers can minimize the extra work of mentally connecting different items, the readers can focus more on the content, and it will help them understand the content better. This situation will be very good for the readers. Good axis labels will minimize the reader's effort by minimizing these connections between multiple items. How to do that? It is simple. Instead of using alphabets, numbers, or symbols to label, use short, meaningful words as labels. Words themselves directly tell what individual labels mean. But good axis labels can do more than just showing the meaning of the labels. They can also be used to explain additional information, such as experimental procedures. One method is to organize the labels structurally in multiple groups or layers. So, good authors can let their graph or figure speak the content by 1. Straightforward labeling with words, and 2. Organizing the labels in multiple groups or layers if necessary. Good authors will craft their graphs and figures this way. Example of good access labels. Our milestone article shows one of the best examples. When we look at the figures in our milestone article, we can see the careful attitude of the laureates, especially in the access labels. I would like to show you an excellent example from this article. Let's look at figure 2b. This is one figure before our milestone graph. Here's the reason why I chose to explain this figure 2b, not our milestone graph. Similar experimental procedures are used between figure 2b and our milestone graph, which is figure 3d. But in terms of the axis labels of a bar graph, our milestone graph has a simplified form of figure 2b. And figure 2b provides a more detailed version of the information, and it is easier to understand. Experimental procedures. First, I will comment here about how the experiment was done in this figure panel, figure 2b, especially how RNAs were introduced into the cultured cells. I would like to explain them because this understanding will help us when we talk about the access labels soon. My comments are based on my reading of the figure legends and the methods sections of the paper. Basically, various forms of RNA were introduced into cultured cells. That triggered those cells to release inflammatory cytokines. And the amounts of released cytokines were measured and compared between which RNA was introduced. For introducing RNA into cells, the laureates used the transfection reagent. Transfection is a procedure that introduces foreign nucleic acids, like RNA, into cells. The transfection reagent that the laureates used is called lipofectin. It is a synthetic lipid-based chemical product created by the company Invitrogen. By the way, it is now superseded by similar lines of products, lipofectamines. Here is what the laureates did in the experiment. I'm going to describe 9 procedures. 1. At first, lipofectin was mixed with specific RNA so that they formed a complex in the solution. 2. Then the mixed lipofectin RNA solution was applied to the cultured cells. 3. The laureates waited for 1 hour. During this transfection treatment, the RNA was taken up into the cells with the help of lipofectin. 4. The culture medium bathing the cells was then replaced with fresh medium. 5. The laureates then waited for about 7 hours more. During this time, the cells that took up the RNA responded to the RNA by releasing inflammatory cytokines to the culture medium. 6. The released cytokines accumulated in the culture medium. 7. After the waiting period is over, the culture medium was collected. 8. The liquid part of the culture medium, called supernatant, was analyzed for the amount of inflammatory cytokine. 9. For this measurement, the laureates used a method called ELISA, which stands for the enzyme-linked immunosorbent assay. These procedures were repeated multiple times to obtain enough data for the graph. So, lipofectin was present whenever any RNA was introduced into the cells. Now, in order to refine the ideas about what is happening under these experimental conditions, I would like to ask you one question about the cells that release the inflammatory cytokine. RNA is applied to the cells, always together with lipofectin. Then, can we tell whether the cells respond to RNA or lipofectin when they release the inflammatory cytokines? The laureates incorporated a few important experimental conditions to answer this question. The simplest one was to create an experimental condition where only lipofectin was applied to the cells in the absence of any RNA. If this lipofectin-only condition did not lead to any release of cytokines from the cells, it means that lipofectin will not stimulate the cytokine release by itself. In turn, this means that the RNA will stimulate the cytokine release when it is applied together with lipofectin. In fact, this is what the laureates found. The experiment would have been a failure if the lipofectin-only condition had induced cytokine release in the same way as the lipofectin RNA mixture did. Fortunately, this did not happen. This lipofectin-only condition is one of the conditions called negative controls in experiments. So the overall experimental conditions included two groups. The first group is a negative control where only lipofectin was added to the cultured cells. And the second group consists of all other conditions where lipofectin RNA mixture was applied to the cells, and different RNAs were used for each of these conditions. With these experimental conditions in mind, we can read Figure 2b, especially its beautiful axis labels. Reading Figure 2b. Like our milestone graph, this Figure 2b is a horizontally oriented bar graph. In fact, it is made up of four bar graphs shown side by side. And the four bar graphs show the results with four different cell types. At the top of the four bar graphs, there are four labels for the cell types. Each bar graph was created for one cell type. The horizontal axis shows a measured amount of cytokines released from cells when RNA was introduced into those cells. In this figure, the cytokine was not the tumor necrosis factor alpha that was measured in our milestone graph, but it was interleukin 8. These analyzed cells were dendritic cells in our milestone graph, but in this figure 2b, they were the model cell lines in culture called the human embryonic kidney 293 cells. We often call them HEK293, HEK293, or HEK293 cells. For the purpose of this experiment, these cells had been genetically engineered so that they expressed a specific member of a receptor called a toll-like receptor, abbreviated as TLR. And the members are numbered. The analyzed members in Figure 2b were toll-like receptor 3, toll-like receptor 7, and toll-like receptor 8. Toll-like receptors recognize foreign or abnormal materials, such as the materials derived from pathogenic microorganisms and the materials from damaged cells within the body. Those recognized materials include the nucleic acids, DNA and RNA. When those materials bind toll-like receptors, specific intracellular pathways are activated, and inflammatory cytokines will be released from the cells. This process leads to the activation of the so-called innate immune responses that protect the body even when the body is exposed to those materials for the first time. I have explained the three keywords or key phrases here. They were 1. Toll-like receptors, 2. DNA and RNA, and 3. The innate immune system. They are very important for us because all these words appear in the very first sentence of the abstract of our milestone article 1. The short sentence says, quote, DNA and RNA stimulate the mammalian innate immune system through activation of toll-like receptors, close quote. So these keywords must be very important. Let's get back to our focus, that is, figure 2b. We already talked about the cells and the horizontal axis. Now let's talk about the vertical axis, which is the category axis in a horizontal bar graph. The axis labels here are the most amazing among all the figures in this article. The axis labels are used effectively to explain the experimental conditions in a reader-friendly manner. The graph has 14 horizontal bars for each cell type that expresses specific toll-like receptor. and each horizontal bar has a category axis label or a category name. In this experiment, it shows which RNA was introduced into the cells. So there are 14 labels to explain the bars. But there are more labels. And here's the key point. All those category axis labels are the exact keywords representing the condition, not simple alphabets or numbers. And also, they are shown in three structural layers so that the spatial relationship between the labels can tell us the conceptual relationship between the labels. Let me explain. At the far left, there is the first layer, that is, the highest layer. The first layer label is the most general label, and it covers all 14 horizontal bars. This label says lipofectin. This label means that lipofectin was applied to all the 14 experimental conditions for the 14 bars. To the right of the first layer, there is the second layer. The second layer labels, two in number, show the two source RNAs. They are modified by the laureates, and the specific modifications will be named and shown in the third layer. The second layer labels are RNA 1571 and RNA 730. As we discussed in the last episode, the laureates mentioned that the number in the RNA name indicates the length of the biological RNA. So RNA 1571 is an RNA with 1,571 nucleotides, and RNA 730 is an RNA with 730 nucleotides. These second layer labels mean that either of these two RNAs was applied to the cells, with or without the modifications. To the right of these second layer labels, there's the third layer. The third layer labels, 14 in number, show which nucleosides in the source RNA were modified. There are some more details about the third layer labels. Under the second layer label, RNA 1571, there are seven third layer labels. The one at the top is unmodified. This represents the unmodified form of the RNA. This label indicates that the unmodified source RNA was used as a comparison experiment. Six other third layer labels are the abbreviations of modified nucleosides, such as S2U for 2-thiouridine and the Greek alphabet Psi for pseudouridine. We discussed these abbreviations in the last episode too. Under another second layer label, RNA 730, there are four third layer labels. The one at the top is unmodified. Again, this represents the unmodified form of this RNA. Three other third layer labels are again the abbreviations of modified nucleosides. So under these two second layer labels of RNA, there's a total of 11 third layer labels. This number is 11 because two RNAs had 7 and 4 third layer labels, respectively, and 7 plus 4 equals 11. I said earlier that this graph has 14 third layer labels, corresponding to 14 horizontal bars. So there should be three more category names. These three third layer labels do not have second layer labels of biological RNA. For them, there are just first layer label, lipofectin, and the third layer labels. This is because, for these three experiments, no biological RNAs were added to the cells. The first of these three says none. In this case, lipofectin was applied to cells, but no RNA was applied. As we discussed earlier today, this lipofectin-only condition served as one negative control. Two other third layer labels say poly-I-C and R848. They are non-biological chemicals used as other controls. We will be able to talk about them in another episode. Anyway, these chemicals were mixed with lipofectin and applied to the cells, like biological RNAs in other experimental conditions.
Phew!
It took me so long to explain these things. But the laureates could do the same thing, just with the access labels and their layered structures. And the layer structure is very clear. My response when I saw this figure first was, wow, this is simple and beautiful. The labels are crafted so well. The labels and their organization are highly informative, well-constructed, and elegant. I can feel the laureates care for the readers. Again, please take a look at them yourself. The graph is Figure 2B in our Milestone Article 1, published in the journal Immunity in 2005. How the category access labels are simplified in our milestone graph from Figure 2B. Finally, let's go back to our milestone graph, which is Figure 3D. In this graph, the category access labels were simplified. This is reasonable because the experimental procedures are almost the same as in the earlier figure, Figure 2B, that we discussed in detail today. And the details are already explained there. Here are the two changes in the category access labels of our milestone graph. One change is that the overreaching first layer was removed, so we do not see the label lipofectin in the first layer. Another change is with the third layer label for the negative control experiment, where no RNA was added to the cells. Its label was none in Figure 2B, but it was changed to lipofectin in our milestone graph. Otherwise, the labeling rule remained the same in our milestone graph. Clear access labels and their layered structure are very helpful for our reading. Summary. Let's wrap up. In today's episode, we discussed one substep. Step 11-4. Understand the basic experimental conditions by reading the access labels. We learned that the access labels of bar graphs were carefully designed by the laureates. We could see the best examples in Figure 2B of our Milestone Article 1. There are at least two excellent features. One, all the category access labels are the exact keywords representing the conditions. And two, the category access labels are shown in three structural layers so that the spatial relationship between the labels tell us the conceptual relationship between the labels. I'm not saying that our milestone article is the best and all other papers are not good in terms of access labels. I'm not saying that. There are many papers that show excellent designs of access labels. But if you want me to show you one example, I would be happy to choose our milestone article because we have been talking about it in our mini-series about reading, and the paper shows one of the best uses of access labels. When you read any paper next time, please enjoy reading the graph labels, like access labels. Then think about how the labels are used to convey messages effectively. This is it for today. Your action. Please send me an email. I would like to communicate with you about your comments, suggestions, and criticisms. Constructive ones, please. My email address is ideas@synaptologica.com. Thank you for joining me in today's episode of Foundational Skills in Life Sciences. I am Dr. Synaptologica. I'm looking forward to connecting with you again. I'll see you soon. Bye for now.